Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Brad Steiner about protection. And if you have a question, of course, jump on board. If you have a story, perhaps you've been attacked by a thug, share that story with us as well. And we'll come back in a moment with your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, your calls. Brad Steiner, our special guest. Brad, if somebody has a concealed weapons permit and they are carrying, should they have that one loaded in the chamber at all times?
Are you talking about a semi-automatic pistol or are you talking about a revolver?
Semi-automatic.
Well,
because there is a difference, of course.
If a person is well-schooled in its use, and has a very reliable carry mode, and if he is up to snuff with it, for example, a 45 automatic, a 1911, carrying it cocked and locked, which means around in the chamber, hammer back, and the safety lock on, the slide lock on, I don't see any problem with that at all. But if a person is not, it may be a good idea if they carry a double action revolver, semi-automatic pistol, because that eliminates the need to go through the process of racking the slide. As far as a revolver goes, well, unless a person is carrying a genuine 1980s a cowboy revolver, which was dangerous to carry with a round right under the firing pin. I always carry six rounds in a six shooter, or nine if you've got a 22 rimfire revolver, which, by the way, is an excellent self-defense weapon for someone who, for whatever reason, can't carry or can't handle the heavier recoil of a heavier caliber weapon. 22 rimfire is excellent also for elderly people, people in wheelchairs, people who are infirm. The elderly have a particular need for self-defense and every right to avail themselves of firearms, but often handling them can be a very difficult thing for a woman in her 80s or a wheelchair invalid or someone who's infirm. On the other hand, let's say one of the excellent Ruger 22 target pistols, which is a semi-automatic, is a very excellent weapon, easy to handle and very reliable, or a 22 revolver. Smith & Wesson made lots of those, and they're always good to latch on to. They're very reliable.
In your opinion, those that break into homes, what are they looking for? Items to steal and pawn? What do they want?
They're looking, in some cases, to attack the residents and to steal. They're looking, in some cases, where they go to steps to ensure that no one is home, then they're obviously looking to steal.
Right.
They could be looking for both. Sometimes they try to break into a place for revenge, for some imagined or real insult, the homeowner, I don't know, whatever. In any case, a home invasion always justifies deadly force. You don't know what's on their mind. And if you speak to any seasoned police officer, he will verify what I'm saying here. Anyone who breaks into a home that he knows is occupied is a very, very dangerous individual because he's willing to deal with the people who are present there. And that generally means that he has a weapon, and he's willing to use it.
That's right. And it could be a knife. Could be anything.
Yeah, a knife will kill you just as dead as a bullet.
It sure will. Let's take some calls here for you, Brad. As they line up, we'll go to Barbara in Colorado to get things started. Hey, Barbara, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
I was in Frankfurt, Germany once. I was traveling up to Amsterdam, and I'd been traveling with someone, and they left, and I had a night in the town by myself. So I went to a dance performance by Alvin Ailey and had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Found myself after the performance at a bar, and the dancers were there. Partied with them. It was wonderful. Party moved on after that to another location. And as that as I was walking to the second location with the dancers, I was trying to keep in mind where I was, because I wasn't that familiar with Frankfurt. I come by subway, and I wanted to make sure I knew how to get back to the subway. Mm-hmm. And at the second location, we were there for a while, and it was getting late. I wanted to get back. And there was a man who'd been hitting on me the whole time. And one of the dancers told me I should let him walk me home.
Oh, boy.
Back to the hotel.
Was that dancer retarded?
No, but it seemed like he knew him. And he was very earnest about it. He's like, you can trust me. It's fine. And
sounds like a setup.
Yeah, it does. I was just going to say that, Brett.
As I left.
You should have asked the guy, when'd you walk me home?
As I left the bar, that's exactly what I thought, because he grabbed my arm very firmly and then proceeded to walk me back through a park.
Did you feel uncomfortable at any point during that goings-on?
Yes, and I was beginning to plan what was I going to do, because now I was in a park.
Right.
And there were lots of, I could see people making out in the shadows.
There's a basic rule in self-defense, and that is never allow any criminal or a suspicious person to remove you from the initial scene. Don't go somewhere with someone if you have the slightest trepidation. And at that point where someone puts his hand on you, and he does it firmly, as you say, you instruct him to take his hand off you. If he does, you stop dealing with him. If he doesn't, you break his leg.
So what happened, Barbara?
Well, we were walking, and he was pointing out these people who were making out, and it was obvious that's what he wanted to do. And I said, no, I'm married. You are going to take me back to my hotel, and you're going to do the right thing. And we kept walking. And in the meantime, I was becoming very aware of how my hand was in situation with his, and remembering everything I'd ever learned in Aikido. And I was literally quite ready to throw him at any moment if I needed to. If he tried to pull me off the path, I was going to put him down and break his arm.
Did you have to do that?
No, I didn't. I was able to keep walking. He did try to pull me once, and I pulled him back, and I said, you were going to walk me.
So he was aggressive, but just not that aggressive. So she was lucky, Brad.
Yeah, very lucky.
And you're in Frankfurt, Germany. You don't have any weapons, so you're up a creek in case he does something. Glad you got out of that, Barbara. You were lucky indeed. Now, in situations like that, Brad, don't even leave with a stranger, right?
Oh, absolutely not. And don't be very friendly with somebody, anybody, who makes you feel uncomfortable. You establish immediately what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and you are definitely going to do it. And if at any point, I'm talking now mainly for a woman.
Right, understand.
Girl. If at any point he puts his hands on you, that's an attack. And you drop him right there. Now, you don't have to kill the guy, but I think breaking his leg is a fair an equitable thing to do. Why should you leave yourself open to danger? Women have been raped like that. Girls have been kidnapped and raped and murdered like that with far less aggression. I remember that videotape, that surveillance tape years ago of this 14-year-old girl at a car wash, and she's standing there, and this man walks up to her. It looked like a father or an uncle or something like that. Takes her by the arm, and they walk away together. Well, it happened to be a criminal. He raped and he murdered that girl. He was subsequently caught, tried, and sentenced to death. But there's an example of giving the benefit of the doubt or hesitating to act. You don't put your hands on another person and control them or block their path or threaten them. Now, it used to be understood. In 1860, if you did that, you God knows what would happen to you. But today, people are so dumbed down as far as their sense of propriety and their self-respect and refusal to be dominated by another person in any way, that they're, you know, the path is clear for predators to at least try.
You've talked a couple times about breaking someone's leg.
Right.
Just kind of give us a visual aspect of what that is.
I was in Taekwondo for 8 years, and of course they emphasize a great deal of kicking. Well, Taekwondo is not the very best way to defend yourself, but I did develop very powerful kicks, and I got to like kicks, particularly the side kick. And a book I studied by a man who I became a close colleague with for 25 years, Killer Get Killed by the late Colonel Rex Applegate, illustrated a low side kick delivered to the knee, called it the knee kick.
For the front of the knee, right? Bang.
Front, inside, or outside.
All right.
In fact, from the outside, it can do more damage, rip apart more cartilage. But it takes about 80 pounds of force, which even a case of consumption can deliver, and the knee will break. And if you don't want to break the leg, you can stomp into the shin bone just below the knee, scrape down the shin bone, and crush the instep. That will cause the person's head to come forward and their mouth to open, which will leave them susceptible to another blow that I teach, which is called the chin jab, or an attack to their eyes, or a chop to their throat, or anything you care to do. These are very simple moves, but there is a right way to do them, and you have to learn that. And if you learn it and you're ready to do it, you're mentally conditioned to do it, that'll work against anyone.
How do you do that, Brad, when the guy's probably moving around and stuff like that?
Well, if he's moving up to you and he takes your arm, he's not.
Okay.
I was thinking about that lady, the caller, and her situation. If he's moving around, then wait until he moves toward you.
And then go for the knee.
Or something else. You can go for anything else.
80 pounds of pressure would be...
80 pounds of force will break the knee.
What would that be like, though? Give me a kind of an example.
Do you have any average-sized 12-year-old girls in your family, relatives?
No, I've got two 13-year-old granddaughters, but I'm not going to kick their knees.
Oh, they have average size.
Yeah.
No, I was thinking of the opposite.
I'm not kicking their knees.
I'm just kidding about that. I didn't mean that. I meant if you can use them as a reference. If they are about of average size, they can easily break a man's... I'll tell you a story, true story. Years ago when we were living in Phoenix, I had this lovely lady as a student. Her husband was a terrific guy. She was a fairly petite Filipino lady. Her husband was a huge American guy. He was an Air Force officer. And they were in Phoenix, Arizona. She had two sons. One was about 14, one was 6. And I used to go to her house. I gave her private lessons. And I didn't mind. The 6-year-old would come into the room and watch everything. And I never thought twice about it. He was such a sweet little guy. He was so polite.
6 years old, a little guy.
He was 6.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember very carefully. He was tiny. He was intelligent, but he was very little. And one day, this happened. This is true. One day, his father came home, walked in the door. Now, this man was well over 6 feet tall, and well over 200 pounds in weight, and he was in excellent condition. He was an Air Force officer. He walked in the room, and as he entered the hallway, the son, copying exactly what I wasn't at the time wise enough to prevent him from seeing,
right,
what I taught his wife.
But he learned well.
Yeah, he yelled. He just yelled, and his father got shocked, and then he lashed out, kicked him in the leg. His father, he didn't get a broken leg, but his father fell down, broke a bookcase, and he was hurt. His knee had to be wrapped, and he was badly hurt. And he said to his wife, you know, he figured out what was going on, and he spoke to Thelma, and she explained everything. And he said to her, he says, "You're getting your money's worth from that guy."
Oh, my gosh.
And I never let that little kid watch him.
My God. I wonder if the little kid's into karate and jiu-jitsu and everything else, though.
I don't know. But it's good to, and this is an unfortunate way to find out. But she had total confidence in that kick from that day forward, and I feel sorry for anybody who bothered her because
that's
I know
an interesting.
She broke his leg.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Leslie in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Okay. What I'm about to say, I hope I'm not offending you, but I'm an African American, and this is what happened to me. You know, George, you know what hot weather is, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I had six Caucasian youth almost attacked me for no reason at all. They sat up here and said, tap dance and throwing things at me, and they wanted to hit me, and I wasn't even bothering with them. And what my man said, it's just not applying to African youth, okay, and Mexicans and all that. Also, Caucasian youth are going wild.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
I was shocked and appalled, man, because I'm a friendly guy. I believe in God and stuff. And the way they came at me, and then they stopped throwing rocks at me, man. You know what I'm saying? So what I want to say is, you know, don't always think that Caucasian or African youth are out here acting bad. It's Israelites. I went to Wayne State, and 12 Israelites tried to jump on me, and I wasn't bothering none of them.
Yeah, that's why we call them thugs. We're not picking out any racial.
Right. There's no monopoly on outrageous and evil behavior by either whites or blacks or Asians or Hispanics or whatever. It's a phenomenon that's human, and it's very dangerous and very bad. Anybody can be a victim, and anybody can be an attacker. It is increasingly dangerous, though, in our major urban areas for everybody, and they need to understand that, be aware, raise their level of alertness, and, in my opinion, take serious steps to learn how to defend themselves.
That's right.
And to avail themselves, legally only, of firearms and other weapons to protect themselves.
I would guess, Brad, in suburbia that most break-ins are done by white males.
Well, probably. It's not an ethnic thing. It's a criminal thing.
Yeah. You know, thank you, Leslie. Appreciate your input in that, though. We're going to come back in just a moment and take some more calls, final calls with Brad Steiger. But Brad Steiner, Brad, would you give us your websites?
Yes, of course. The first one is www.seattlecombatives.com. The other, www.americancombato.com. And the other one is Prescott, Prescott, combatives.com. And all three of them have very valuable information. AmericanCombato.com has a monthly newsletter. It's got years of them on the front page. You can read them all for free. You can download them. And Seattle Combatives has well over 400 articles.
All right, great. We're going to talk more about this, Brad, when we come back and take final phone calls. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Brad Steiner with us, and we'll get to your calls, our final segment. Brad, you are a hypnotherapist as well, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
How do you use that, or do you apply that at all with what you do?
Well, yes, I do. Years ago, I was in different martial arts for many years when I was younger, and I always felt that the method of teaching was lacking in a tremendous way in that it didn't do anything to condition the mind. Using a method I derived from my knowledge of hypnosis, I developed a means of teaching classes so that the mental conditioning accommodates the physical drill. Now, I also use hypnosis with people, obviously, as a hypnotist. Mm-hmm. I only focus on the use of hypnosis for combatives, for survival, physical training, and this sort of thing. And I'm a fellow in clinical hypnotherapy. I was awarded that for the work I did in relation to the martial arts with hypnosis. I also have 20 self-hypnosis programs available, and you could read about them on our websites. Self-hypnosis is very effective, too. Some people have misconceptions about hypnosis, and I provide an introduction with each course. Hypnosis is not dangerous. It's very safe. You can't be hypnotized against your will, except possibly with narco-hypnotism, which you have to be a medical doctor to administer. And I'm not a medical doctor, and I never have anything to do with anything but straight-out hypnosis. There's no demonic element to hypnosis. It's a straightforward means of relaxing the conscious mind, which is the questioning mind, and reaching the subconscious, which is the unquestioning mind. And it's very quick, efficient, and simple. The installation of those aspects of combative mindset, fear control, and the various things that are necessary for efficiency in close combat and self-defense using hypnosis. I like to think of it as weight training for the mind, just as weight training greatly intensifies the physical exercise. So the use of hypnosis greatly intensifies learning and education.
Would you recommend men and women go through some kind of self-defense program?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, there's no, it's not a gender-specific subject, although it tends to appeal more to men. But in my opinion, women need it desperately. It's not going to make a woman the physical equal of a stronger man, but what it will do is teach her how best to use the strength she has. And the way I teach, it teaches her tactics and strategies to take advantage of her position as a woman and capitalize on the damage she can do to an assailant. So, yes, it's very, I think it's necessary for anyone who can move to learn how to defend themselves.
Okay, now let's go to the phones again. Tracy in Granite City, Illinois, on the wild card line. Tracy, hi there.
Good morning.
Morning.
I listened to your guest, Mr. Steiner. I don't mean to insult him in any way, but I think he has some serious trust issues as far as talking about, like, the panhandlers that are, especially around St. Louis, down on the landing of every stoplight, there's somebody with a sign, homeless and hungry or work for food or whatever. And if I have a dollar or anything, I will always give somebody something, or I've been known to give them food. And they may be telling the truth and they may not, but that's not on me. The way I see it is
right. We're
all on this earth to worship God and to love and take care of each other. And if you do something for someone out of love and out of kindness, whether they're misleading you or not, you're doing good.
Okay, so Brad, she says you have a trust issue with some of these people.
Of course I have a trust issue. I have a trust issue with anyone I don't know. it's not that I would hurt them, or not that I would not be receptive to them not being untrustworthy if I got to know them. But when I meet someone that I do not know and meet them under conditions that could be dangerous, I don't trust them, no.
Would you recommend to people not to help out the panhandlers?
That's an individual decision. I would certainly recommend that they not offer any help to any aggressive people
aggressive.
Who demand it.
Okay, and the definition of aggressive would be
someone
what?
Someone who approaches them in a demanding or intimidating
manner. All right, right up to the car, for
right.
example.
Now, see, well, what you described earlier, if somebody is simply
sitting there in a corner.
Yeah, he's apart from you. He's not approaching you. He has no interest in you. Maybe he's playing a musical instrument, you know, something like that. That's a different case. But case by case. There are instances where those homeless people have committed murders
yes.
and have done insane things and very damaging things to innocent people whose intention it was to help them. Just like those two freaks who murdered the man who helped them
yeah.
get the car out of the ditch.
Yeah, absolutely. Brad, I get off work really late, whether I'm in St. Louis or in Los Angeles.
Well, please don't ever leave coast to coast.
No, don't worry about that. But
okay.
but you know, every once in a while I'll go to a late night store that's open and pick up some things, a store, grocery store, something. And quite a bit times, primarily in Los Angeles, there is a homeless person sitting outside the store. I mean, like right by the door that you go in. And I find that to be kind of strange that the store would permit that. Not that, my God, there's anything wrong with these people, but it's just a little disjarring at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it is, that somebody's sitting outside of a store, and you know they ask you for money. I mean, there's no question they ask you. And you've always wondered, what happens if you say no or you just keep walking? Are they going to chase you from behind?
I've had that experience, so I can tell you my experience. I can't answer for everything. Case, but I say no, and nothing happens.
Nothing. And why did the stores let them stay there, though?
You'd have to ask the storekeepers. I don't know. Maybe they're not aware always.
No, they got to be aware.
Something inside. I don't know. But I'll tell you something. As you said when we began our discussion this evening, it's happening during the day and night.
Yes.
And you know, yes, the nighttime does tend to offer a greater possibility of trouble. But I would not discount anything from happening during broad daylight, because it does. And you always need to be careful. And, you know, I think that the lady that called in made a point for me unintentionally, unwittingly, and that is, I want people to develop a trust issue. I want them like Doberman pinschers, not like beagles. and Dobermans, if you've ever dealt with them, they're wonderful dogs. They're lovable, they're intelligent, they're obedient, they're good companions, but you're not going to sneak up on one.
No, you sure aren't.
And if you do try, you will be very sorry. And that's the way I would like people to be. Be very lovable, be affectionate, be friendly. Be decent, be intelligent, conduct yourself like a gentleman or a lady at all times, but be prepared to switch over adequately when and if you must in order to protect yourself or your loved ones.
Let's go to Jay now in Gardena, California, wild card line. Good morning, Jay. Go ahead.
Good morning. How you doing, sir?
Good. Thank you.
I have listened to this show for about 30-something years, and I guess something rubbed me a little bit the wrong way tonight, and I just had to call in. I'm a first-time caller.
Okay, thanks for calling, and what was it?
And I have respect for both of you guys, and I have sat down, and I have listened to you guys, and Ms. Nooney, I have listened to you for over the years, and I know you got a good heart and you're a good person by even some of the things you say that you do personally. But I would like to know one thing. I boxed for the PAL from the time I was like 8 years old till I was like 22, and I did train for the PLS Boxing Club in North Carolina. And I have to tell you, the police officer who I was boxing for and played football for when I was a youth and stuff was totally different in the climate we have today. And I think there's somewhere down the line, we really, this ain't going away, we really going to have to start having some serious talks about what's really going on in our law enforcement. And Mr. Nooney, I know you always say, a police officer don't wake up in the morning and say he's going to kill someone. But if you're a corrupt police officer...
And there are some. We're not denying that. There are some.
If you're a corrupt police officer, it's not that you have to wake up in the morning and say you go kill somebody. You're just a corrupt person. You're just an evil person. And the question I have for your guest is, even if we take the low number of 1%, there's 10,000 cops in L.A., that means there's over 100 cops that is corrupt. And in L.A. Sheriff Department, there's 9,000 cops. If you take that 1%, that's 90. And if you take New York City, that's 34,000 cops. That's 350 cops. Do you know that's enough?
I agree with you 100%. I think that those police officers who abuse their authority, who are criminally inclined, who do anything that is wrong and outside the parameters of their responsibilities should not be police officers. They should, in appropriate instances, be arrested, and other instances, thrown off the force. I think this, the screening process is very, very important. And I think that what happens is, like with any other organization, you get a percentage of bad apples. And that's terrible with police work because of the sensitivity of what they are charged with doing. So if a barber is incompetent and he doesn't cut your hair right, all right, so you don't go back. But if a police officer misapplies his responsibilities, he can do serious damage to a person's life. So I agree with you. I just want it to be understood that it's not the majority of the police, that it's not the police per se who are the enemy, that it's in cases where wrongdoing occurs, it is the responsibility of that wrongdoer, just as it is of the criminal in the street.
Well, right.
I mean, wouldn't blame a criminal's brother, who was not a criminal, for what his brother did. I would blame his brother, and the other guy may become a police
officer. Or how about the father of the Orlando killer in the nightclub? I mean, you can't blame the father. No. I mean, a psychologist might say, well, how was the kid brought up? Maybe you do blame the father, but I mean, I see where you're coming from, Brad.
Well, you can blame the father for what he did as a father, but you can't blame the father for what his son did as an adult.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But with the situation with the police, and then we'll wrap things up with final calls here, is it going to get any better or is it going to get worse? I mean, again, there was a case that I saw 6-7 months ago, you saw it too, where a police officer stopped an African-American gentleman in his car. The guy gets out of the car and runs. He doesn't have a gun, but he just runs.
Right.
And the police officer chases him down and kills him. Now, that officer has got to be arrested and put away.
Yes, and I'm not evading that point. All I would say is this. I don't know personally why he shot him. Now, if he did just that, he chased him down and then just shot him, that's murder.
That's murder. That's I don't murder. Know why the guy ran, first of all.
Well,
obviously,
see, now,
he was scared.
And I don't know what happened. I'm not excusing the act of chasing down a suspect and just shooting him after you catch up with him. If that is all that occurred, then that's murder. It's cold-blooded murder.
Cold-blooded.
And it shouldn't be excused. He should, I guess, be charged with first-degree murder. I don't know. But whatever you charge someone with, he should be charged with. But I don't know that that's all that happened. See, it's very difficult to say. Maybe at some point when he caught up with him, a gesture...
No, he never caught up to him. It was from afar, apparently.
Yeah, he may have thought he was reaching for a gun. I don't know. But I agree 100%. If this individual was just shot,
running away,
with,
no gun, just running away.
Okay, well, that's just cold-blooded murder, and nobody who would do that should be on any police department or in any security capacity anywhere ever.
Does a mindset of a police officer, Brad, get caught up in the action of what's going on?
I think the only way to answer that would be by examining the individual case, the individual officer at the time. Some people have very good self-control and handle crises very well. Some people freeze. Some people get panic-stricken and take actions that are inappropriate. Some people act almost unconsciously out of terror. It's so varied and it's so individual that the only fair way to answer that is on a case-by-case basis.
Let's take, do we have time for one more? I think we do. Jeff in North Carolina. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, how are both of y'all tonight?
Good, Jeff. Thank you.
Look, I got admiration for both of y'all. I think both of y'all are putting, given a given situation, you would use common sense and really make good, sound decisions on police officers and the situations they're faced with. But in the general media, you see it and you see people going out and they're jumping on one side or the other. They're jumping on the police side or they're jumping on another group side, and they seem to have blinders on and they don't even use common sense. It's like they're just focused on proving the other side wrong. Now, I have a question, and I would love to hear your guest's response.
Okay, go for it before we're out of time.
Yes, sir. What I wanted to know is, how does he feel about holding the police to a higher standard? I know with their job being so hard, it's hard to hold them to a higher standard because it is such a tasking job. But then at the same time where you hold them to a higher standard, like in North Carolina where you're coming, George, all the police officers on the personal vehicles, you see the thin blue line, and they get special privileges for being a cop. You know, they look out for each other. It's a privilege of being a cop.
Well, I think it's a major, major problem that has got to be worked on and fixed. You know, it's a tough job being a police officer. At the same time, you know, you have an officer who shoots an armed guy with a police record. You know, the guy should not have been running around with a gun. And people had called saying that there's some whacked out guy out here. It's a dangerous situation. Brad, I want to thank you again for being on the show. Keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you. Always a pleasure to speak with you, George. Have a good evening.
Brad Steiner, his websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. In a moment, when we come right back, we're going to talk even more about things that you're going to love, prophetic perils. Holly Drennan-Dale joins us on Coast to Coast AM.